Well, the great debate occurred. A friend texted me and asked who was more presidential. I replied that Hillary won the debate but did not seem especially presidential with her constant mugging, Cheshire cat grins, smug looks, and self-righteous cackles. Donald did not get the big knockout supporters hoped for. Instead, Hillary kept her composure while Trump often tried to dominate, talking over the moderator, Hillary, and even the time allotment itself. And while Hillary egged him on with her smug face, smarmy, self-satisfied smile, and frequent derisive laughter, Trump often got tangled in the weeds as well, often falling for the bait that Hillary threw out there, and no wonder she looked so self-satisfied. In the end, I think, Hillary wins on style points while Trump got some memorable shots off himself. But it was Hillary's sheer bravado, her cojones, her galling Clinton attitude that allowed her to plunge into areas that she arguably had no business lecturing others upon, like cybersecurity. How in the world could miss, I'll bring my own server to the State Department, lecture anyone else? And yet Trump missed a big shot here. In the aftermath, as the event fades, we are perhaps less impressed by Hillary's discipline when we realize she's been playing various roles her whole life. Instead, it's frustrating to know Trump could have given a better performance had he merely prepared more studiously. So his greatest strength leads to a stumble. But second was the fact that the debate was long on promises and short on details. When my friend pressed me, I explained that while Trump was vague, Hillary was just as bad. That's because Trump was undisciplined last night, although that did not make Hillary's feeble forays into policy remotely coherent, just less manic. Hillary seems to have no functional understanding or even interest in economics. Donald, on the other hand, came across as someone who makes decisions when he needs to and doesn't pay attention until that time. What Hillary gained was the sense that she's not dying, which is a huge deal here, and neither was she overawed next to Trump. She was not intimidated. Preparation has a way of doing that, doesn't it? Trump gained by seeming more civil and less insulting, yet refusing to give up his maverick approach. Net change, probably zero. And Trump now leads the UPI Election College poll. I've got some more observations, but I want to play the beginning, which was probably Donald's best part, and then I've got a bunch of clips for you, but we'll get through as much as we can. I thought, you know, it's memorable TV. Donald missed giant opportunities. Why did he miss them? He wasn't prepared, and you could tell that he was a little bit nervous, a little bit off his game, and he just didn't have that feel about him. And also, honestly, I thought the moderator was biased, but I'm so used to people in the media being biased to the left. I barely noticed it, but we'll talk about that. Here we go. Here is your debate, the start of it, how it got off. And I think that it was an opportunity for Trump, not totally squandered, but he could have done better. But, you know, it's onward and forward for the Trump campaign. For Hillary, I say it's a net change in votes, but I mean, I think it's a huge, huge, huge win for her in terms of her health. She seemed healthy. Number two, she seemed coherent. Number three, she was not intimidated. Number four, she came up with answers that, while I didn't find them to have any substance, she stated them. She stated them as if she knew what she was talking about. Here we go. The start of the debate.
I want to welcome you to the first presidential debate. The participants tonight are Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. This debate is sponsored by the Commission on Presidential Debates, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. The commission drafted tonight's format, and the rules have been agreed to by the campaigns. The 90-minute debate is divided into six segments, each 50 minutes long. We'll explore three topic areas tonight: achieving prosperity, America's direction, and securing America. At the start of each segment, I will ask the same lead-off question to both candidates, and they will each have up to 2 minutes to respond. From that point until the end of the segment, we'll have an open discussion. The questions are mine and have not been shared with the commission or the campaigns. The audience here in the room has agreed to remain silent so that we can focus on what the candidates are saying. I will invite you to applaud, however, at this moment as we welcome the candidates. Democratic nominee for President of the United States, Hillary Clinton, and Republican nominee for President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Well, I don't expect us to cover all the issues of this campaign tonight, but I remind everyone there are two more presidential debates scheduled. We are going to focus on many of the issues that voters tell us are most important, and we're going to press for specifics. I am honored to have this role, but this evening belongs to the candidates and just as important to the American people. Candidates, we look forward to hearing you articulate your policies and your positions, as well as your visions and your values. So, let's begin. We're calling this opening segment Achieving Prosperity, and central to that is jobs. There are two economic realities in America today. There's been a record 6 straight years of job growth, and new census numbers show incomes have increased at a record rate after years of stagnation. However, income inequality remains significant, and nearly half of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Beginning with you, Secretary Clinton, why are you a better choice than your opponent to create the kinds of jobs that will put more money into the pockets of American workers?
Well, thank you, Lester, and thanks to Hofstra for hosting us. The central question in this election is really what kind of country we want to be and what kind of future we'll build together. Today is my granddaughter's 2nd birthday, so I think about this a lot. First, we have to build an economy that works for everyone, not just those at the top. That means we need new jobs, good jobs, with rising incomes. I want us to invest in you. I want us to invest in your future. That means jobs in infrastructure, in advanced manufacturing, in innovation and technology, clean renewable energy, and small business, because most of the new jobs will come from small business. We also have to make the economy fairer. That starts with raising the national minimum wage and also guarantees finally, equal pay for women's work. I also want to see more companies do profit sharing. If you help create the profits, you should be able to share in them, not just the executives at the top. And I want us to do more to support people who are struggling to balance family and work. I've heard from so many of you about the difficult choices you face and the stresses that you're under. So let's have paid family leave, earned sick days. Let's be sure we have affordable childcare and debt-free college. How are we going to do it? We're going to do it by having the wealthy pay their fair share and close the corporate loopholes. Finally, we tonight are on the stage together, Donald Trump and I. Donald, it's good to be with you. We're going to have a debate where we are talking about the important issues facing our country. You have to judge us. Who can shoulder the immense, awesome responsibilities of the presidency? Who can put into action the plans that will make your life better? I hope that I will be able to earn your vote on November 8th.
Secretary Clinton, thank you. Mr. Trump, the same question to you. It's about putting money, more money, into the pockets of American workers. You have up to 2 minutes.
Thank you, Lester. Our jobs are fleeing the country. They're going to Mexico. They're going to many other countries. You look at what China is doing to our country in terms of making our product. They're devaluing their currency, and there's nobody in our government to fight them. And we have a very good fight, and we have a winning fight, because they're using our country as a piggy bank to rebuild China. And many other countries are doing the same thing. So we're losing our good jobs, so many of them. When you look at what's happening in Mexico, a friend of mine who builds plants said it's the 8th wonder of the world. They're building some of the biggest plants anywhere in the world, some of the most sophisticated, some of the best plans. With the United States, as you said, not so much. So Ford is leaving. You see that, their small car division leaving. Thousands of jobs, leaving Michigan, leaving Ohio. They're all leaving, and we can't allow it to happen anymore. As far as child care is concerned and so many other things, I think Hillary and I agree on that. We probably disagree a little bit as to numbers and amounts and what we're going to do, but perhaps we'll be talking about that later. But we have to stop our jobs from being stolen from us. We have to stop our companies from leaving the United States and with it firing all of their people. All you have to do is take a look at Carrier Air Conditioning in Indianapolis. They left, fired 1,400 people. They're going to Mexico. So many, hundreds and hundreds of companies are doing this. We cannot let it happen. Under my plan, I'll be reducing taxes tremendously from 35% to 15% for companies, small and big businesses. That's going to be a job creator like we haven't seen since Ronald Reagan. It's going to be a beautiful thing to watch. Companies will come, they will build, they will expand, new companies will start, and I look very, very much forward to doing it. We have to renegotiate our trade deals, and we have to stop these countries from stealing our companies and our jobs.
Secretary Clinton, would you like to respond?
Well, I think that trade is an important issue. Of course, we are 5% of the world's population. We have to trade with the other 95%. And we need to have smart, fair trade deals. We also, though, need to have a tax system that rewards work and not just financial transactions. And the kind of plan that Donald has put forth would be trickle-down economics all over again. In fact, it would be the most extreme version, the biggest tax cuts for the top percents of the people in this country than we've ever had. I call it trickle-down. Exactly what it would be. That is not how the economy. We have a different view about what's best for the economy, how it will actually prevent rising income. From some different perspectives, I understand that. You know, Donald was very fortunate in his, that's all to his benefit. He started his business with $2 million borrowed from his father, and he really believed that the more you help wealthy people, the better off we'll be, and that everything will work out from there. I don't buy that. I have a different experience. My father was a small businessman. He worked really hard. He printed drapery fabrics on long tables where he pulled out those fabrics and he went down with a silk screen and dipped the paint in and took the squeegee and kept going. And so what I believe is the more we can do for the middle class, the more we can invest in you, your education, your skills, your future, the better we will be off and the better we'll grow. That's the kind of economy I want us to see again.
Let me follow up with Mr. Trump if I can. You've talked about creating 25 million jobs and you've promised to bring back millions of jobs for Americans. How are we going to bring back the industries that have left this country for cheaper labor overseas? How specifically are you going to tell American manufacturers that you have to come back?
Well, for one thing, and before we start on that, my father gave me a very small loan in 1975, and I built it into a company that's worth many, many billions of dollars with some of the greatest assets in the world. And I say that only because that's the kind of thinking that our country needs. Our country's in deep trouble. We don't know what we're doing when it comes to devaluations and all of these countries all over the world, especially China. They're the best ever at it. What they're doing to us is a very, very sad thing. So we have to do that. We have to renegotiate our trade deals. And Lester, they're taking our jobs. They're giving incentives. They're doing things that, frankly, we don't do. Let me give you the example of Mexico. They have a VAT tax. We're in a different system. When we sell into Mexico, there's a tax. When they sell in automatic, 16% approximately. When they sell into us, there's no tax. It's a defective agreement. It's been defective a long time, many years, but the politicians haven't done anything about it. Now, in all fairness to Secretary Clinton, yes, is that okay? Good. I want you to be very happy. It's very important to me. But in all fairness to Secretary Clinton, when she started talking about this, it was really very recently. She's been doing this for 30 years. And why hasn't she made the agreements better? the NAFTA agreement is defective just because of the tax and many other reasons, but just because of the tax.
Let me interrupt just a moment. But
Secretary Clinton and others, politicians, should have been doing this for years, not right now because of the fact that we've created a movement. They should have been doing this for years. What's happened to our jobs and our country and our economy generally is, look, we owe $20 trillion. We cannot do it any longer, Lester.
Back to the question, though, how do you bring back, specifically bring back jobs, American manufacturers? How do you make them bring the jobs back?
Well, the first thing you do is don't let the jobs leave. The companies are leaving. I could name, I mean, there are thousands of them. They're leaving, and they're leaving in bigger numbers than ever. And what you do is you say, fine, you want to go to Mexico or some other country, good luck. We wish you a lot of luck. But if you think you're going to make your air conditioners or your cars or your cookies or whatever you make and bring them into our country without a tax, you're wrong. And once you say you're going to have to tax them coming in, and our politicians never do this because they have special interests, and the special interests want those companies to leave because in many cases they own the companies. So what I'm saying is we can stop them from leaving. We have to stop them from leaving, and that's a big, big factor.
Let me let Secretary Clinton get
Well,
let's take a little break here, running long on time, but that's how the debate started off. Now, I've got some thoughts coming back on the other side of this break of what he did wrong and how he can get better. He's got to do better. He's a smart guy. He's disciplined in his own way, but he's been so used to doing debates off the top of his head, and then he runs into someone who's done 100 debates, and he's on the biggest stage ever. She's got the game, and he doesn't. I've got thoughts on that, so we'll be right back and talk about it. 623 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. Delighted that you're joining me this morning, AM Las Cruces on KOBE, and we'll come back and talk about this, a few mistakes he made. We want more debates. All right. So I wanted to get into some of the mistakes I think Trump made. And don't forget there's narratives and there's what they call meta narratives. Some of the narratives in this race include the economy, unemployment, national security and international security, a meta narrative, transcendent theme that you want to tap into. And I don't know, I'm sure that I mentioned at some point, I was a professor of speech and debate in Florida, St. Thomas University. So I spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, what it means to give a good speech and studying it and everything. A meta narrative that you tap into is honesty or dishonesty, transcendent issues that are bigger than any particular issue. So Clinton's honesty or her dishonesty, Donald Trump's arrogance, his rudeness. I mean, these are meta narratives. There's other meta narratives too. Another meta narrative is God. Another meta narrative is religion, ethics, morality. These giant issues that get tapped into during a debate like this. And so some of the notes that I took for Trump, I mean, I don't think that Hillary could have done much better, because I think that she is the kind of person who she portrayed herself. She's a hard worker. She got through law school because she works hard and studies and memorizes stuff. Even though she's sick, just because she gave a debate last night, in my mind, doesn't mean that she's doesn't have a brain injury or Parkinson's or whatever deeper issues are there. And that's another meta narrative: health, stability. All of these things would be used in dealing with the issues or the narrative topical subjects that they get into. I don't think she can do much better. Now, if I was her debate coach, I would say the smile was great. The confidence was wonderful. You mugging and looking very smug is terrible, because people already don't like you in general. And specifically, people don't like you. And generally, they don't like smug. They don't like self-righteous, especially somebody who has been tainted with a lot of scandal. For you to stand up there and preach on some of this stuff sounds absurd. You got to be careful on that, you know? And there is where you come in. She could have maybe made a joke about, you know, I'm talking about national security, and, you know, I just had that screw up with my personal server, which I did admit to. It was a dumb idea. I learned a lot from that. But on national security or on cybersecurity, I'm strong. And here's why I'm strong. So anyway, for Trump, I would say smile. Don't stand there scowling the whole time. It is not a good look. Number two, be patient. You got an hour and a half to period of time to make your points. Use that, like, you know, Tom Brady working the clock. Wait for a kill shot. Don't interrupt people. Don't interrupt. It makes you seem like a bully and that you don't have any discipline. So that's where he should have downshifted and moved on to another format. The format with 15 people or 10 people is not the same as the format with two people. There's a lot more scrutiny that's placed on you. Do more prep. Do all the prep you possibly can and then do some more. Stand up straight. He's standing at an angle, maybe because she's kind of short. I don't know. Don't interrupt. Short answers. Major on the majors. Cover everything in the Clintons. All right. Now, what I would have done if I was his debate preparer, I would have put out, these are the things that the American people need to find out about. They need to find out about the emails and really what happened and what James Comey said. Number two, when she brings up taxes, and these are all points or counterpoints, she brings up taxes. What do I tell him to bring up? the Clinton Trust, the Clinton Foundation, and say it's a business that doesn't pay any taxes. It only uses 5% of its income for charity. How can you hit me on my taxes and say that I'm corrupt when this thing doesn't even follow the rules and it could be worth $100 billion? And then I would have said, go watch Clinton Cash on YouTube. And, you know, 5 or 10 million people would have done that. You got to get out there, Benghazi. You got to. So what I would have said is, here's your roadmap. It doesn't matter where she goes. It doesn't matter how she attacks you, because her record, because you've never been a politician, especially, your record is not exposed like she is. Go after. You got 5 or 10 talking points here, all of them negative. She's seen as a liar. She lies all the time. You know, so anyway, let's catch up on a break here, and then we're going to come back and dive down into a little bit more of that opening. But here's his missed opportunity. For sharing of profits, disgorging the wealthy's money, socialism. He should have, where's his pen and paper? She says for sharing of profits, I write down socialism. She starts talking about nuclear, I write down Iran. She writes down cybersecurity, I write down personal server and email. She writes taxes, she says taxes, I write down the Clinton Foundation. And if Holt keeps interrupting and correcting me, I'd say, hold on a second. I see now that I've got two people I'm debating. Let me answer Hillary first, and then I'll answer you, because now it's 2-on-1. I would have called him out so fast. I thought that was terrible, and he was either going off his own inner liberal, or somebody told him, you've got to, you know, do some work to rehabilitate Hillary. When she said, you live in your own reality, I would have said, yes, Hillary. The rest of us are not felons on the loose who can't be prosecuted because they're too powerful. Devastate her, you know, go after her. Anyway, take a break and come back and get into this a little bit more. 523-1450 if you have points, questions, comments, if you disagree especially, and we'll be right back. And I've got some interesting stuff to tell you about the polling. You'll be shocked.
But if you want to know.
All right, you disagree? You disagree with my analysis? That's fine. I don't care. I'll tell you, the thing that I probably that I've done in my life that I enjoyed the most was teaching this debate class, this speech and debate class. And I ran into some lady at some place at Walmart, and she came up and she goes, "Don't I know you from somewhere?" And I said, "Yeah, you were my student in the speech class." And she goes, "Oh." And then she said something along the lines of, "I use that course every day, what I taught the people." And you know, when you're teaching a class, you're learning about the subject as you teach it, you know, because nobody really has any topic mastered completely. But I thought it was profound. It was really fascinating because there's nothing more characteristic of humans than communication. And there's nothing more important, you know. And one of the things that I told people, you get up at the podium, don't waste time, and hit your mark. Make a good impression at the very beginning. Don't make excuses for yourself. Don't make faces. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. But I think that the Donald made some obvious mistakes that he can correct. That's the good news for him. Now, here is the really weird thing. I went and checked polls for you for this morning, and Trump v. Clinton, about 80% to 20%. Now, Trump, the people who vote on Trump tend to be more conservative. I understand that. I looked into the Time poll, and I looked into the ABC News poll, and I just couldn't understand it. Who are you voting for? ABC News poll. And this is post, after the debate. Donald Trump, 54%. Jill Stein, 21%. Gary Johnson, 15%. Hillary Clinton, 10%. And then the Time poll and this ABC poll and the Time poll had both said that Donald Trump won. Now, what do I make of that? I mean, it could be simply that Donald Trump's followers are so much more active. They're so much more interested in the race than Hillary is, than Hillary's people are. What do you think about that? But I also think that, you know, Trump didn't fatally damage himself. What he did was he reconfirmed biases against him. Hillary didn't really do that as much, except for being smug. And I got another topic I want to bring up on this too in a little while, and that topic is, I'll just let you kind of simmer with this one a little bit. This idea that liberals have policy answers in depth. There's another narrative out there. This false narrative that the liberals have the real policy. Like, everything good in the world has been attributed to liberals. More loving, more caring, less judgmental, more scientific, more smart, better educated, more open-minded, less prejudiced. You know, all these things, and certainly all of them can't be true. And I'm going to tell you something right now. Liberal policy is a quagmire of cliches for the most part. The real innovative ideas are in the conservative movement. And historically speaking, that's true. And historically speaking, liberalism has failed in every instance, in every incarnation. But, you know, it's up to conservatives to make these points. It's up to Donald. If Donald wants to be a conservative, he's got to get up there at some point and he's got to break it down. So how do you keep businesses from leaving? You don't stop them. You go to the state that they're in. And, you know, some sort of a national workshop, some sort of a national board. What do we need to do to keep this company here? Well, what are the reasons that companies go to a place in the, you know, build a headquarters in the first place? Well, a lot of times it's where the founder of the company lives. If a company gets bigger, why does it go one place or, you know, relocate to another? There's just not that many issues. One of which, of course, is tax burden, and another one is red tape. Not much beyond that, but, you know, livability of the city. There's great corporations that have started in Seattle. You know, for some reason, Seattle is a font of creativity, but, you know, Boeing relocated because of the tax structure. Now, if I'm the governor of that state, I'm going to say there's no way we're letting Boeing relocate to, of all places, Illinois. What is it they're better about their tax policy than ours? And let's fix it, because in fixing it, we will save billions of dollars in taxation. And that's one of the problems with talking about liberalism is caught up in cliches. Liberalism is so caught up in these old battles of fighting against the evil capitalism, fighting against the greedy owners. It's so caught up in this kind of religious mission to establish itself. And even when it's losing, it doesn't care because it's fighting the good fight. Only it's not really the good fight. It's a terrible battle. It's a terrible struggle to squeeze every dime of taxes out. And it's just ruinous, you know? So if Donald Trump wants to keep the companies here, that's the kind of thing that we need to do. And companies relocate because it's cheaper and companies want to survive or make a profit, whatever. So, I mean, you know, Donald Trump needs to work on not just being a reactor. All right, here is just a little bit. Here's Hillary's response to this opening question on economics.
Stop for a second and remember where we were 8 years ago. We had the worst financial crisis, the Great Recession, the worst since the 1930s. That was in large part because of tax policies that slashed taxes on the wealthy, failed to invest in the middle class, took their eyes off of Wall Street, and created a perfect storm. In fact, Donald was one of the people who rooted for the housing crisis. He said back in 2006, gee, I hope it does collapse because then I can go in and buy some and make some money. Well, it did collapse.
That's called business, by the way.
9 million people lost their jobs, 5 million people lost their homes, and $13 trillion in family wealth was wiped out. Now, we have come back from that abyss, and it has not been easy. So we're now on the precipice of having a potentially much better economy, but the last thing we need to do is to go back to the policies that failed us in the first place. Independent experts have looked at what I've proposed and looked at what Donald's proposed, and basically they've said this, that if his tax plan, which would blow up the debt by over $5 trillion and would, in some instances, disadvantage middle-class families compared to the wealthy, were to go into effect, we would lose 3.5 million jobs and maybe have another recession. They've looked at my plans, and they've said, okay, if we can do this, and I intend to get it done, we will have 10 million more new jobs because we will be making investments where we can grow the economy. Take clean energy. Some country is going to be the clean energy superpower of the 21st century. Donald thinks that climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. I think it's real.
I do not say that.
And I think it's important that we grip this and deal with it both at home and abroad. And here's what we can do. We can deploy a half a billion more solar panels. We can have enough clean energy to power every home.
I mean, you know, you've got to take notes. Nobody remembers everything. You've got to take notes of all of this crap that she just said. Are we really going to move into alternative energy and become a superpower, a renewed superpower? That is so absurd. But he's leaving it unchallenged, and he's getting baited into these responses.
We can build a new modern electric grid. That's a lot of jobs. That's a lot of new economic activity. So I've tried.
She might as well get up and say, we're going to become the yogurt capital of the world. We're going to have yogurt factories in every town, and a lot of people are going to be, you know, employed there. And in addition to that, we're going to export all our yogurt to Mexico, to Canada. China loves, I mean, she doesn't have any more substance to what she's saying. And this is what I'm talking about. Liberals falsely claim to be policy maestros. There is no substance to what she's saying, other than the government coming in and saying to every person, you've got to have solar panels. And then somebody comes along, and undoubtedly somebody connected to Hillary Clinton's family, and starts building solar panels that everybody has to buy at an inflated rate, that are then they're supported, the business is supported because it's a green energy by the government. It would be another debacle. And so she doesn't know her rear end from a hole in the ground in terms of economics. And he's standing there listening for personal insults, responding to that, and not taking notes. I mean, you've got to be a student, you know, and you got to take notes, and you got to respond to the meat of these things. He could have destroyed her last night. That's the sad thing.
To be very specific about what we can and should do, and I am determined that we're going to get the economy really moving again, building on the progress we've made over the last 8 years, but never going back to what got us in trouble in the first place.
Mr. Trump.
She talks about solar panels. We invested in a solar company, our country. That was a disaster. They lost plenty of money on that one. Now, look, I'm a great believer in all forms of energy, but we're putting a lot of people out of work. Our energy policies are a disaster. Our country is losing so much in terms of energy, in terms of paying off our debt. You can't do what you're looking to do with $20 trillion in debt. The Obama administration, from the time they've come in, is over 230 years worth of debt, and he's topped it. He's doubled it in a course of almost 8 years, 7.5 years to be semi-exact. So I will tell you this. We have to do a much better job at keeping our jobs. And we have to do a much better job at giving companies incentive to build new companies or to expand, because they're not doing it. And all you have to do is look at Michigan and look at Ohio and look at all of these places where so many of their jobs and their companies are just leaving. They're gone. And Hillary, I just ask you this. You've been doing this for 30 years. Why are you just thinking about these solutions right now? For 30 years you've been doing it, and now you're just starting to think of solutions.
Well, actually,
I will bring back jobs. You can't bring back jobs.
Well, actually, I have thought about this quite a bit.
Yeah, for 30
and
years.
I have, not quite that long. I think my husband did a pretty good job in the 1990s.
Her husband continued Ronald Reagan's revolution, but she's trashing it. Anyway, missed opportunities. We'll take probably a double break here and come back. All right, so I think that this you know race is going on, but somehow Trump is continuing to build a momentum. He is continuing to build. When I say somehow, I'm saying that basically, and I'm gonna switch to just individual clips next hour, but. He's doing it somehow. I mean, there's this logic and this movement. It's kind of like a glacier. You know, nobody can stop a glacier, right? I mean, and it doesn't move a lot. And but the weight and the pressure and everything behind a glacier means you can't really stop it. That's how they end up shearing mountains in half and stuff like that. But I think that Trump still has the momentum, according to the polls. Now, we'll see if anything switches, but I don't think that Hillary really got up and proved that she's the president and he's not. I don't really think that she's got it in her to act more presidential. And here's another thing about speech and debate and everything. Somebody gives a speech, and according to the ancient Greeks, there was three elements that persuaded people: ethos, pathos, and logos. Ethics, passion, and logic. Trump had passion. He sometimes had logic. Hillary had, I don't know. She had calm. But anyway, I think what is one of the things that is hindering Hillary in any debate or any speech she gives is people already doubt her, fundamentally doubt her, already see her as a liar. That's a devastating thing to overcome. And I think once her husband had been exposed on the national stage as having lied, he never really recovered there's levitas and gravitas as well. He never recovered his gravitas. Gravitas means gravity. It means seriousness. And part of that is, you know, the ethical or moral aspect. You're a serious person. Levity is the ability to relate to the average person, or to, you know, levity is being, we see it as a little more lighthearted. I think the Romans saw it as the ability to connect with people. So, you know, which I think Trump has. So anyway, I think it's too early to figure out what happened in this debate exactly, but the polling is going to come out. But I think that Trump lost because, in terms of style, not about what was spoken, he came across as who he has been in the past, and he needs to evolve beyond that. And the next debate will show whether he's willing to do the hard work to do that. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell. We'll take a break and come back, and I'll dive into some individual sound bites for you. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450 on KOBE, Kelly O'Connell Show.
But if you want to know how I really feel, just get the cameras rolling, get the acting going. Baby, you know, my love for you is real.
And Earth, you don't want to do that.